Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada. CKUT.
Did you get vaccinated?
Not yet, but I will soon.
And which one are you getting?
I'm getting the dance vaccine.
The dance vaccine? Great idea.
There is this thing. Do you realize what is? There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is July 2nd. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT is broadcasting from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Kanyenkehaka, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. Stay tuned, we'll be right back with some local news.
C is for
cauliflower,
confusion, creation,
pickle, K is for
kitten,
cam,
seat, wait, fianrupsi, you, unbearable,
U is for underground,
oh yeah,
umbrella,
T, trite,
tremendous,
torment,
tire,
C, K,
I can't think of a U one,
T,
F is for famous,
fun, fumble, M is for Montreal.
First, the news. Quebec's regional directors of public health publicly declared support for a nationwide call to decriminalize simple drug possession in Canada. The official decriminalization is a federal decision. The province backed the abolition of mandatory minimum penalties for drug possession on June 25th. And on July 1st, Montrealers marched to honor Indigenous children after multiple First Nations discovered a series of unmarked graves on the grounds of former residential schools. Thousands gathered at the base of Mount Royal, dressed in orange and holding signs to cancel Canada Day. We'll have more from that event in this hour. Residential school survivors can access 24/7 emotional support by calling 1-866-925-4419. Again, that's 1-866-925-4419. Canada Day celebrations went on in other parts of Montreal despite some cities canceling festivities. Pierre Fond's Roxborough held its first drive-through Canada Day parade where each family stayed inside its own car. And a 13-year-old Westmount High School student created a podcast to share the stories of Holocaust survivors globally. Eliane Goldstein says the goal of this project, called The Effect on Us, is to educate listeners and, quote, not to let history repeat itself, end quote. And a new documentary about coming of age during the Oka crisis was released today. It's called Beans, and it's the creation of Mohawk filmmaker Tracy Deer. It reenacts the 1990 armed standoff between Kanyenkehaga protesters and the Quebec police. Beans will be released in Quebec cinemas. And in hockey, the Habs are in the Stanley Cup Finals. And on Wednesday, Quebec's Public Health Department denied the Montreal Canadiens permission to sit 10,500 fans in the Bell Center for Game 3. The Canadiens will play against the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And changes are coming to Montreal's transit system. The STM is reducing the number of fare options. Children under 11 can now take public transit for free if they're with someone older than 14. Seniors 65 and up can get 70% off their tickets and can ride free come 2023.
And starting July 1st, the STM, which are transit officials, will now have more powers of policing in Montreal after the city voted for it earlier this spring.
You're listening to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is ongoing throughout Quebec. The combined effect of two doses ensures better efficacy of the vaccine, reducing the risk of getting and transmitting the virus. You'll also stay protected for a longer period of time. Coming to your appointment for the second dose of the vaccine is a must, whatever else is on your schedule. The second dose of vaccine is essential. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Are you a tenant in Montreal? Do you have questions about your rights? Your local housing committee can help. To find the housing committee for your neighborhood or for more resources, go to www.rclalq.qc.ca.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday Off the Hour. The time is just after 5 p.m. My name is Brian Jefferson. Up first on this episode of Off the Hour, July 1st was a day of reflection and mourning around the city. Joel Samadal has more.
This piece is going to discuss some difficult themes. If you need to talk to someone, the National Indian Residential School Crisis Hotline can be reached at 1-866-925-4419. Again, that's 1-866-925-4419. Thousands of Montrealers marched in solidarity with Indigenous neighbors to honor those murdered by Canada's residential school system and to support those still feeling its effects. The event was held Thursday and organized by the Native Women's Shelter in the wake of the recent discoveries of hundreds of unmarked graves near former residential schools across the country. This includes 215 children in Kamloops, 751 in Saskatchewan, and 182 near Cranbrook, BC. Survivors say there are more discoveries to come. It was a July 1st like no other. The morning began with a car caravan from Ganesetake to Park Extension, where bikers joined the gathering. The crowd moved down to Jean Mons, where they met thousands of other people on foot to honor children found at former schools. Indigenous and non-Indigenous gathered in a sea of orange shirts to denounce the celebrations of Canada Day this year, especially in light of the recent findings.
The root word in there is water. That fire, right now, when it got consumed by the wood, is orange. That's on fire. And when we talk about planning, we're talking about all of that fire that is burning each and every one of us right now. Because when our fire goes out, like that fire that's burning here, we return back to ash. But our fire comes from the great fire, the great mystery. And we go back home. Now, we're all wearing orange, for the most part, a lot of people. What color is that? Orange. So what we are doing is we are igniting the quick fire that exists within each and every one of us as a human family. And when we fully understand and encapsulate this idea, you cannot kill a woman, you cannot kill your brother, you cannot rape, you cannot destroy the Mother Earth. You even have to put walking soil, which is your body, because this is the only thing that you can ever say that you have dominion over. Your children are not yours. All of the worldly possessions that you have are not yours. The only thing if you want to have dominion over is this walking soil. So we better treat it right. Love it. Love one another. Love the Mother Earth. Love our ancestors. See the sacred fire within each and every. Let's make these changes that need to happen, not only for us as human beings, but even the natural world. The animals are suffering. The animals are coming to us in pure white. Notice how many animals are all white. What does white represent? It represents sacredness. It represents the holy. The animals can't communicate with us like, no. But what they're doing is they're coming in pure white to thinking that your thought
what we talk about, white skin, white dog, no skin, when we're dealing with condolence ceremony, or white eagle feather, when we're dealing with grief and sorrow and pain, what have you. But anyway, I'm just going to end with one final thing now regarding this time that we are in. We have to wake up to what's unfolding. We're entering the, what they're calling the Anthropocene. Human beings, because they feel that they have been over the much of seeing us to possibly our extinction. And we don't have very much time left to remove all of the lies, the deceit, what have you. Come from the place of the heart. Let's love one another. Let's talk about the peace, the respect, and the friendship that we're supposed to have between each other. When we talk about whatever our spiritual belief is, we're still talking about that sacred energy. And if you don't believe it, look at your chest right now, and your chest is expanding and contracting. Your heart muscle is expanding and contracting. The snow came and the snow went. The oceans come up and the oceans go down. This water comes to our heads, and that something hits the skin. That all participated, each and every one of us. Whether you see it, believe it or not, doesn't matter. Even the sense of that. Well, we all know, as in our way, when we're dealing with grief and hurt and pain, we have a ceremony that we do. Because when we meet people that we love, we cry, we don't really hear a lump in our throat, our bellies have a pit. So what we say is we say no, that if we could wake our eyes, even if it's only for one day, start to see them. If we can open our ears and we hear the rustle of the trees or the murmur of the trees, or the lots of those kids, that will pick up our spirit even if it's only for one day. And because we know water is life, why wouldn't what that place you follow us first? Even in your own birth story, when you were born, your mother's water broke, you follow the water. That water broom has water in it because water is life. So now in the symbolic way, we take that water and we ask that water to remove that tightness in our throat, and that water will go through all of our bodies, and if there's any negativity, it will help to dissipate that, and even that knot in the pit of our stomach that we say only for one day. Because what I say is that when we look at what we've done to each other as human beings, the entire world needs a peace ceremony that we can start to fall together. See different, hear different, speak different, and do different, and not only for us, but to be there tomorrow. But we have a responsibility for the unborn nations, the future generations coming, so that when they be born and they come into this world, that they will inherit a happy, safe, clean, beautiful, peaceful, loving world. And that's our responsibility for them. Now,
I'm just going to say in English a little bit that we are happy to be here for a sad occasion from the findings that were for the children of residential school. I will tell you a little bit about my family and concerning residential school. My mother was an orphan, and she ended up in residential school because they were nomadic people, and a lot of people during the travel got lost on a bay. One of the bays in Jean's Bay. And her parents died because they lived in the winter all the time and the summer all the time, and all through the seasons they lived outside before they had a house. We had our first house in 1972. So anyway, I had asked Naka this morning if I could say a few words regarding my family. If it was not for some maniac brother-in-law, because we lived in Nagoki, there's no road over there, just fly in by plane. My parents uprooted us and moved us to Peipla. We call it Peipla in English. It's on the Highway 3rd, Highway 17, between Thunder Bay and Marathon. But anyway, because of this bad situation that our family was in, I didn't have to go to residential school. My four brothers went to residential school. My three sisters went to residential school. My two nephews, older than me, went to residential school, including four nieces, older than me, also went to residential school. And not only that, they were separated. Some went to Pelican, some went to McIntosh, some went to St. Anne. And I think to translate all that, I think it would be really hard to do. For me, anyways, I don't know. What do you figure out? I appreciate you listening to my story about my family.
I'm also a daughter to a woman who was sent to residential school when she was 10 years old. All this is a lot to process for us. We revisit our traumas. We revisit our hardships. And in some way, we're also reminded of how far we've come and how strong we are to have come through all of what we've gone through. What my mother's been through, what my grandmother's been through, and we're still here. And we're here with our kids, and they can be proud of who they are. So even though one generation were sent away to school, were made to be washed away from their culture and their language, our stories, our songs, our culture is stronger. Our songs have a life, our language have life. And we can sing them, our songs today, we can tell our stories because they have a life that are stronger than anything that brings us down. We come from the strongest survivors in the world. Even though we have the highest suicide rate in the country, this is something that we need to acknowledge and recognize and do better as Canadians, as Quebecois, to support our young people who come from the strongest survivors in the world. And there's a lot of healing that needs to take place, and we're doing our very best. And so I want to share a song. And I invite all of you to sing along with me if you want. This is to all the kids, like my family, we all spoke about. They deserve to live. They could have been parents and grandparents right now. They have a spirit that's still alive. And we can honor those spirits. And we can honor the beautiful spirits of our young people right now. So this next song is about being proud to be Inuk, to be Indigenous, to be a good human being, because we come from the most beautiful place and we come from very strong people. and we have a very good future.
So my name is Caroline. So aujourd'hui on est présent pour se réunir pour oh mon Dieu Seigneur. Aujourd'hui c'est vraiment une grosse journée émotive concernant ce qui se passe au Canada depuis 154 ans, puisqu'aujourd'hui le Canada célèbre son 154e année de bullshit, de génocide tout simplement. Donc, célébrer le Canada en ayant déjà en tête cette perspective me semble quelque chose de très déshumanisé. Aujourd'hui, on se rejoint pour, oui, enterrer les corps qu'on a trouvés, mais aussi pour rendre hommage à ces enfants-là et à tous ceux et celles qui seront à venir. Because we have so much more to find, comme underground. On est ici, oui, pour un brin de réconciliation avec ce qui se passe autour, mais plus pour s'unir, je te dirais. Et pour moi, le fait de voir que tous ces gens-là portent la couleur orange makes me realize that we know what's happening and we want to do a change for that. That's it. First, you will need to learn why the Auric College is on point, okay? It's an intimate history, comme c'est une histoire intime avec une personne qui a été dans une école résidentielle et qui avait un chandail orange. Et puis, ce chandail orange-là ne lui a jamais été rendu. Donc, tout le tirolire, là, c'est vraiment quelque chose de très deep. Et aussi, dans certaines communautés, the orange color is for the death side and the other one, like for like white world, orange color means communications. So they have like a really like huge symbol for the orange. Like we have an historic part, we do have a symbolic part and a meaning part. So if you want to like décortiquer ces trois sides-là, pour la couleur orange, ça, tu vas avoir vraiment plus de power for that.
Okay, so that's why today everyone is dressed in orange.
Yeah.
And overall...
Mais solidarité, ça va être le premier mot, là.
Okay, so first, could I get your name and your pronouns?
Lindsay?
Yes, okay. So, yeah, I also just want to ask you, like, today, why you're here and what this event is about, what it's representing.
Well, here we're standing for all the children that couldn't make it home, that were taken upon their will from their families. They were stripped of their culture, they were stripped of their language. And we're here standing there today to show the new generation so it doesn't reciprocate itself again in the future. This is our time to shine. And it took bodies for them to react because everybody kept silent. And now it's time for everybody to shine and show that the new generation is going to be stronger than that, and we won't let it happen again. That's why we're here today. My grandfather also, he was found also in one of the residential schools in Saskatchewan. So I'm here for him.
I'm Indigenous. I'm from the Muskeg Lake Cree Nation in Saskatchewan. I have lived in Montreal for the past 15 years, working and going to school. And my grandmother is a residential school survivor. And I'm here today really to get some healing from it, I think, to respect and honor the survivors and those children who didn't make it home. So to be here today in Montreal, and there's so many people here, it's actually pretty incredible. I'm very proud to be a Montrealer today.
What changes or what more would you like to see done?
I think a good starting point for every Canadian is to look at the Truth and Reconciliation calls to action in whatever area of work or life that you're in, and really start examining how you, as a Canadian person, Indigenous or non-Indigenous, can listen to the voices of survivors and honor the things that they're recommending.
The crowd then headed downtown towards the statue of the first Canadian Prime Minister, John A. Macdonald, the creator of the residential school system. The drumming and singing continued.
My name is Kevin Daniels, and I'm presently residing in Gunasatake Mohawk Territory. I'm originally from Treaty 4 Territory in Saskatchewan, probably about four reserves over from where they found the 751 bodies. We have a number of residential schools there that have probably in that neighborhood of the same amount of bodies, two to be revealed and exposed. Well, we've known for a long time that they were there. Nobody believed us. Nobody believed us. This event here today means a lot to me because it shows me that Canadians really do care. For the longest time, I never seen the care from Canadians at all. We struggled every day. All of my life we struggled. We went to Ottawa to bring our concerns to Ottawa, and we were always pushed off to the side. We were never listened to. We've lost our lands now. I'm a homeless treaty Indian, and I'm going home to go get my land back.
Yeah.
Great. The solidarity here in Montreal is just great. I've never experienced it before. My first time experiencing the large number of people that you're seeing here supporting our people.
Well, I'm here in solidarity with the Mohawk and First Nations peoples all across Canada. I, for one, I'm not very patriotic, and I'm a first-generation immigrant. Both of my family have been subjected to some kind of genocide, be it slavery or the Holocaust. I'm black and Jewish. So I believe, if I'm in the face of genocide because of my history and the history of my people, then I should be, in solidarity with the people that need it.
Do you think that there's a potential like serious progress going forward?
Progress is like a pretty interesting thing because it's not always, straightforward, but I think what we're getting now is at least a conversation. And I think that's what Indigenous people want, is that they want people listening. They want people actually taking the time to, evaluate the actions of their country and their forefathers. And I hope that's what's going to happen going forward. The interesting thing is, like, they're not asking for, revenge. They're not even out here being violent. They just want people to listen. They're hurting, and they're sad, and they're all kinds of things, and all they really need and want right now is an ear from the people, and that's the least we can give them.
My name is Hélène. It's a very important day for I think all people in this country, because we want to recognize all I should say, criminal activities of the Canadian state against the Native people, and those crimes that have been committed to try to suppress the Native people, try to suppress their future and life, and kill their children. So for us, it's very important in Quebec also and in Canada, because we share the same criminal activities that have been done against the Quebec people, all people here, that we are all together. And we want to have justice. We want to have this situation to be settled, once for all. And that all the historical, injustice has to be redressed. And it's not the Canadian state that will do it, because this state did so much criminal things against, with all their camps, Japanese camps, against the Chinese people who came to work here, against the Irish people and all this. And each time they did criminal things, they just have excuses. They just apologize. But the background, this constitution, this political arrangements are the cause of these criminal activities and injustice. So we have to work on for new things for this country, a new vision for this country, because if we stay with the old British arrangements that we have in Quebec and in Canada, and for even more the nations, First Nations, nothing will be redressed, nothing will be corrected. So we are here today to say that this old Canada, we don't want it anymore. Let's finish with this old arrangement, old country. We want to have something new. And this will come from all of us.
Yes.
All of us.
All of us.
We will build that. Okay? Now we will have to discuss with them.
Okay.
It's them that have to have their own requests and demands, and we know that they have.
Yeah.
So it's not for us to decide for them.
You think we need to have more conversation?
We should, yeah, we should decide with them.
Yeah.
And not without them, because that's what is doing Canadian state for so many decades. It's them who make this, those decisions to steal their kids and destroy them in those schools.
Yeah.
Or in those pension place, you know. But it's because we decide for them. So they should decide themselves. And we should be sure that we will discuss with them. But it's not the Canadian state, because the Canadian state, it's them who brought the Indian Act. It's not us. It's not the people who brought that. The Indian Act is not our creation.
Bonjour, je m'appelle Joliane Anishinaabekwe. Je viens de la nation du lac Simon. Puis je suis ici aujourd'hui pour boycotter la fête du Canada. Parce que le Canada, c'est quelque chose qui a été fondé à partir d'un génocide. Donc, le gouvernement avait émis des lois, sur la loi sur les Indiens, donc qui n'avaient pas le droit de parler leur culture. Ils étaient enlevés de leur famille. Donc, tous les enfants autochtones devaient aller dans des pensionnats où il y avait beaucoup d'abus physiques, des abus sexuels. On faisait même des expériences sur les jeunes enfants. Il y a eu beaucoup d'enfants qui sont morts là-dedans, près de 4 à 5 000. Mais là, vous voyez les découvertes qu'on a faites récemment. En fait, ça va aider vraiment à la réconciliation. Je travaille aussi au gouvernement fédéral, donc je co-préside le réseau des employés autochtones. Donc, on est vraiment un réseau qui veut, en fait, comme augmenter la visibilité des Autochtones puis vraiment avoir un certain pouvoir au gouvernement pour pouvoir changer les choses. Aujourd'hui, je trouve que c'est beau à voir tous les gens qui se sont mobilisés pour venir soutenir la cause. Moi, ça me touche vraiment beaucoup que de voir des gens de toutes les nations, mais aussi des personnes qui sont non-autochtones. Donc, je suis vraiment, vraiment... Ça me touche énormément. Puis ça peut aider aussi à nous guérir en tant que Première Nation.
March has reached their last location, the John A. McDonald statue in Place du Canada. The statue was replaced after being torn down last summer and partially covered with a banner.
My message is personal. I may not be a survivor from the Indian residential schools, but I think we all know that the DYP in Quebec is a continuation. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I do believe that one out of three children is an Indigenous child that is placed in a non-Indigenous family. One in three. Our people is the highest. This is really difficult. So, with this movement, I'm privileged to be here. I feel privileged. Yes, thank you. I feel privileged to be before you, to be able to share a poem that was sent to me from a young woman in BC. She knew someone who was a residential school survivor in Kamloops. And she reached out to me and she asked me if I could share this poem. So, in honor of her friend and a new friendship that I have now, I would like to share this with you.
So her name is Dawn Smith. She's Onondaga Nation. She lives in Six Nations. So this poem goes to all the babies. A silent cry. Silent creaks on the dormer stairs. And we begin to pray. If he's going to take anyone, let it be me. Please let my sister be okay. The black robe slides across the floor, and there's a tap upon my head. I let out a silent cry. As my stomach fills with dread, he takes my hand and leads me down to a room with just one bed. He picks me up, he lays me down. He put a pillow over my head. I close my eyes and I try not to scream, but the pain is oh so real. It was my innocence that bled that night. Because he caused the pain I cannot heal. Then as the days grew on, my belly began to swell. I did not know what was happening. But the black robe, he could tell. When the pain came late one night, the black robe took me downstairs. Deep into the basement, I lay on the floor, cold and bare. I pushed and pushed, and there you were. Then he opened the boiler door. A silent cry escaped your lips before you were no more. Thank you.
My children who are with us today and for a very long time, and this is to all the residential school survivors that are there and to all the families. This song is called Ika Yuma. Hello, mama. Peace.
The evening ended with music in the Mile End near the Van Horn Skate Park. Hip Hop for Iskwayu was organized by members of the Iskwayu Project. It's a part of the Native Women's Shelter in Montreal, aimed to support, house, and keep Indigenous women safe.
Tansé Nitsigasan Mo Clark. My preferred pronouns are she, her, or they.
I guess overall today, starting from like the caravan from Kanetsutake, the march from down from John March to the downtown to the McDonald's statue, and this year, like what overall, what was the significance of this day to you?
Yeah, I mean, it's felt like it's been a pretty, it's just been like an intense day. I think that it's really showed me like how much community really needs to gather right now, like in a lot of ways. And I think that it's provided like a lot of opportunities to grieve, to share, to connect, to acknowledge, to appreciate, to celebrate, and to also like propose ways to be accountable for settler kin and whatnot, and also like I'm just so grateful for community, being able to march and drum and march. It's a lot of energy and a lot of work, and I think we marched for quite a while. But there's also something really regenerative about it, and you know that's what those practices are about, like they're ceremony. So I feel like I've been in ceremony all day. You know, it started with the ceremony and that activation from Elder Kevin Deere with the tobacco and the fire, and it just kept going and it's still going. You know, this is a different form of ceremony too, and it's like in a lot of ways it's like we're honoring our ancestors here, you know, all of us. That's what we're doing. Yeah, I feel, like I said too in the my words, it's like Sagitawin, you know. Sagitawin is how we say love, but it doesn't just mean love, you know. It means like seeing one another and like mirroring one another and being with one another like in a good way. And I really feel that there was a lot of like Sagitawin, a lot of connection and a lot of mirroring, you know. And I think that we need that, like we need to be witnessed for like our challenges and griefs and grievances, and we need to be witnessed for our joy and our celebration. And I felt that, you know, and I felt people were wanting to participate, were wanting to connect, were wanting to learn and listen. And I just hope that that listening can extend into action. And I think that's always the more difficult part for people, because that puts them in a position where they have to get uncomfortable. I think today felt really comfortable for a lot of people because it was like kind of, it was a beautiful day and really nice weather and like so many people and everybody's dressed in orange and oh, this is so great. But I also hope that it's not just like, oh, I went to that one event and I showed up and I did my thing and now I'm just going to kind of carry on not really acknowledging what really needs to be acknowledged, you know, like all of the systemic racism in our healthcare systems and justice systems and education systems and, you know, reserves and water, like access to so many things. So I think it's just like, it's one thing to show up and celebrate, and I'm so grateful for everybody who did. And then I think it's like really what extends from here, you know, how does this extend into people's daily lives? I feel like there's definitely more receptivity. And I think changing from like reaction to receptive is like, that's already like a bit of a shift in kind of like the collective consciousness and collective psyche. And the fact that there were like 10,000 people who came, I think that's what they said, something like that. Like Jaggi Singh, who's like one of the helper like organizers, I think he mentioned he thought there was about 10,000. And so I think like, you know, I think it's important for people to realize, like, it, you know, yeah, what they need to let go of, what power, what comfort, what privilege. And it doesn't mean that, like, they can't still have power, but, like, that power is something that, it's a bit of a softer power, because it's a power that, like, puts you in the circle and takes you off the ladder. And so I think it's, like, to find ways to actually integrate what people are hearing and learning and seeing and reading in the media that it's not just this one happenstance and then like tomorrow turn the page, go on Amazon, buy yourself whatever, you know, that like what are ways to actually have ongoing and continued awareness and relationship. And I really think it's about relationships and to stop othering Indigenous folks and homeless folks and queer folks and Black folks and all of it, you know? Yeah, like that like it's not about other, it's about like what is that seed within us and then how can we actually plant those seeds together, acknowledging that everybody has a place, everybody has a voice, everybody has gifts to share and to give, to exchange, to learn, to grow. You know, it reminds me of what one of my elders used to always say, which is, I'm going to need you as much as you're going to need me. And it's true. So I think what we saw today was a bit of that. We kind of needed the settler and ally folk to be quiet, to watch, to listen, to learn, and to honor and acknowledge and recognize as much as they can. And then, you know, maybe tomorrow, like, we need them to be policymakers and changers and teachers and educators and better parents and better, you know, coworkers and better whatever support staff at a performance show. You know, like, I think it's like, how do we internalize decolonial thinking? How do we internalize real relationships? So I'm half-breed, otherwise known as Machif for Métis. Okay. And so we're the people of, like, the Red River of Treaty 1. And my relatives were French and Cree and Norwegian and British. So that's my mix. So the songs that I sang today were written in Nehyawewin, which is Plains Cree language, and they were co-written with two of my elders, Cheryl Arondel and Joseph Natauhau. And so that's Plains Cree, but Machif, which is like the patois of the Métis people, it's Cree and French. Yeah, so all of the verbs, it's like a dialect, and all the verbs are Cree, and all the nouns are French. You could definitely understand some of it, 100%. But it just like, it's another reminder of like how action-based our languages are. As Indigenous peoples, our languages are all about action and relationship. So if I say, like, it's not a seat, it's a place where I go to rest my hips. It's not a table, it's a place where I go to place my food. It's not a school, it's a place where you go to learn. So it's all about relationships and action. But as soon as we turn it into like a colonial language or a dominant language, it becomes so noun-based and it becomes about ownership and it becomes about, objectification, right? Creates these different forms of hierarchy. Even a computer, they took the word for shaking tent. I can't remember what the word is right now, but basically like because we didn't have words for that. And shaking tent is the place that helps you connect with those who are far. So shaking tent was like a sacred ceremony, and now that's computer. So it's all about relationship, and it's all about action. And so I think if we, you know, really thinking about like indigenizing ourselves or like kind of returning to those original teachings and those original languages, it's all embedded in the language. And it is all action-based.
Do you think it would do good, like if
people learn the languages? Of course! Yes! Even I was having a chat with some friends and we were like, man, can you imagine if you flew into a city and the first language you heard in the airplane was the language of the indigenous peoples? You get that in Aotearoa, like in New Zealand, where it's like primarily Maori people. They have Maori language all over the airport. They have it on the TV. So people are just like, people know it more. More settlers know it. And so like they should be teaching Ginyangaha. They should be teaching Mohawk in schools here. Which is like learning a way of life and a way of thinking and being and feeling and seeing and relating. It's never just the language, you know. It's not like the ABCs or whatever. It's such a different process.
So my name is Jessica Quijano. I'm the coordinator of the Ishkoi Project at the Native Women's Shelter.
All right, sweet.
Yeah. Well, we're a project that prevents and I accompany families and loved ones when Indigenous women and girl, trans or two-spirit goes missing or is murdered, and like trying to locate the woman and like following, providing support for the family through whatever they need. And as well, I do a lot of prevention with a lot of Indigenous women living on the street. Yeah, at the Native Women's Shelter, it's been since 2017, and the Native Women's Shelter has existed since 1987. So we house Indigenous women and their children for experiencing homelessness. Yeah. I mean, I think that when we think about first of all, it's not in any way surprising for a lot of people in the community seeing the number of children being their grave sites, which is really tragic. But we need to remember that there's a lot of those girls that have been missing. We have like an idea of 4,000 to 25,000 missing girls. Those are part of the residential school missing girls on those lists. And I don't think people think about that when we think about MMIW. That is actually those girls that never came home when they were sent to residential school. So I think that we need to remember that we're not post-colonization, that we have more Indigenous children in the foster care system than at the height of residential school. And the same girls that are going missing and being murdered, they are in the foster care system today. So this crisis is ongoing today, and it hasn't ended. At foster care, like youth protection, how children are still removed from their families. I work with a lot of the Inuit community here in Montreal and a lot of teenage girls who are removed from their families, and often the issue is poverty. Like, this is a housing, poverty, education, just like real resources, social services that people need. It's a very heavy issue. It's a very complex issue, and quite complicated. But I think what people like need to understand is that there are solutions. There was an inquiry that 231 recommendations from the Missing and Murdered National Inquiry. And if the government were to put those things into action, we would actually end this crisis of Indigenous girls going missing and being murdered. It does give some kind of hope because we're trying to change consciousness. It's very urgent. So, of course, it's always never fast enough. But I think that it's unfortunate people needed to see actual graves and like children being dug out to not believe Indigenous people who have known this for many years, that their loved ones have been going missing and when they went to residential school. And we need to remember that the last residential school closed in 1996. So it's very, very recent. And anyone who's Indigenous in this country is dealing with the intergenerational trauma of residential school. So it's ongoing right now. And if I would say anything, it's just you have to put pressure on politicians because there's very little political will to change this. Yeah.
The National Indian Residential School Crisis Hotline can be reached at 1-866-925-4419. Again, that's 1-866-925-4419. I'm Joel Samadal, and you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Hi, my name is Sarah Jesmer. I'm part of the CKUT News Collective. What you hear on Friday's Off the Hour show, this show, is only one iteration of what happens every day during the week. We're your Friday team, and we want to take these last few minutes to point you to the Wednesday crew, the ones who make Off the Hour Avalanche, who've been talking about housing for the last few weeks. Here's a sample of their show.
Up now is an interview with Olivia from Reclalk. This interview is in collaboration with Emma, the newest member of the Avalanche Collective. That's up now. So hi, Olivia. Do you mind introducing yourself to the audience and a bit work that you do regarding housing rights?
Yes. Hi, my name is Olivia. I'm a community organizer with the RECLALC, which is the Regroupement des Comités Logements et Association des Locataires du Québec. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's ultimately a coalition working with housing committees and tenant associations across Quebec. A lot of the work that we do is around advocacy and taking direction from tenants on the ground, filtered through the community workers that support them in defending their rights, and taking that to the next level and organizing campaigns around the most pressing needs that tenants face. And ultimately, as many people are aware right now, we're in a housing crisis that's continuing to escalate. So there's no end of work around that. Our mandate is continually shifting, and we redirect sort of according to what our members are really looking for. And so part of our main campaign right now is centered around mandatory rent control and control measures to curb this housing crisis that we're living through, and bringing solutions to the provincial level. And this obviously has a bearing on a lot of our other work focuses, including discrimination, which we just released a report on the systemic discrimination that tenants face at sort of each step of the rental process.
So as you mentioned, Montreal is currently in a housing crisis, and as a result, housing is incredibly difficult to find, with an increasing amount of renters having shared their experience with discrimination during the rental process. You recently published a document detailing some of these experiences. Would you be able to speak about what you found while compiling this report?
Yes. Well, I mean, first I'd say that it's really difficult to compile this kind of report. There's a demand for statistics. There's always a demand for statistics about what tenants are facing. And when it comes to discrimination, it's really difficult to turn those experiences into statistics. So what we're sort of trying to do with these reports, this is the third time we've produced one, is to really get a sense of people's experiences on the ground, experiences looking for housing and sort of at each step of the way, and to be able to sort of, to a certain extent, like share maybe a grouping of these experiences that are obviously representative of the larger crisis and indicative of, you know, something that we know is real, and to have these voices and to share these experiences is a way of also being able to demonstrate out to what extent this is affecting people.
So how did you gather these testimonials for the report? And would you say that the practice of discrimination through the rental process is common throughout Quebec?
So in terms of collecting data, we always work with our housing committees. And so they are the frontline workers who are speaking directly to tenants. And so
that was a sample of a June 30th show from the Off the Hour Avalanche team. Check them out on Wednesday evenings, and you can hear all archives of past sounds and shows on CKUT.ca. Thanks.
Before we go, some news you can use. Yesterday was the biggest move-in day in the city, and reports of evictions, dangerous altercations with landlords, and families searching for homes surfaced. City officials are encouraging those who are housing insecure or without homes to call Montreal's hotline 311. And anyone over the age of 12 in Montreal can now vote on what they want to see their borough's budget put money towards. A list of 35 projects is available on the city's website and are looking for input. You can find that list at montreal.ca. And the Cabot Square Project held its first weekly Aboriginal Friday celebrations. Organizers want to bring together Indigenous artists, musicians, and workshop leaders. That's every Friday starting today from 1 to 4 p.m. at Cabot Square. And a volunteer group called Cyclistes Solidaires are looking for bikers to help deliver food around the city. Cyclistes Solidaires brings food to vulnerable Montrealers. You can find more about how to register on their Facebook page. And on July 4th marks an anniversary event for the Defund SPVM Collective. The group was created in summer 2020 to encourage the city to reallocate funds to community initiatives. A barbecue and live music show will be held at Parc Lafontaine to celebrate from 12 to 6 p.m. And finally, a mass march organized by community group Solidarity Across Borders starts on July 18th. It begins in Cabot Square and is part of a week of action to support migrants with precarious status. You're listening to CKUT. And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective. The collective includes me, Brian Jefferson, Alice Wu, Kate Addison, Joel Salmadal, and Sarah Jesmer. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please contact CKUT's Community News Department at 514-448-4041, extension 7000, or newsintern at ckut.ca.
Bonsoir tout le monde, c'est Alex qui vous parle pour votre émission Café sur les ondes de CKUT. Je vous parle donc en direct de mon studio maison et ce soir, nous avons eu la brillante idée d'enregistrer une partie de l'émission par Zoom avec Anthony qui est en direct de son chalet. Hein?
On dit maison d'été ici.
Oh, maison d'été!
Nous sommes des aristocrates et maison d'été. Donc, je suis très bien, ceci étant dit.
Chanceux, on t'envie ici parce qu'à Montréal, on meurt de chaleur.
J'invite tout le monde à venir se baigner, on a une rivière quand même froide proche.
Ok, c'est entendu.
Mais je dis pas c'est où.
C'est bon. Ok, donc au menu ce soir pour l'émission, Esther B s'est entretenue avec le chercheur basé à Hong Kong, François Mouillot, à propos de son livre « Fractured Scenes, Underground Music Making in Hong Kong and East Asia », donc ouvrage qui explore la scène méconnue de la musique underground à Hong Kong.
Wow!
Et sinon, je vous propose d'explorer la programmation estivale de deux salles cinématographiques montréalaises, celle du cinéma public et de la cinémathèque. Mais pour commencer, Anthony va nous parler du film Beans qu'il a visionné pour nous hier soir.
Mais avant d'en discuter, commençons donc avec un petit extrait.